Okay, so let's try to finish up the siman on Tefillas Kelim over here. So in we're up to, well, I don't know if you call it up to, but we're up to the last few se'ifim in Siman Kuf Tav. Just to go back to something that we mentioned, even though it's the very last se'if, and then we'll go backwards. The Raman Sif Tazayin tells us that if a person puts food in a non-tovel plate, the food is still kosher, right? You're still allowed to eat from the food. So Shlomo Zalman in Mincha Shlomo, I think we may have mentioned this in Chiluk Beis in Son of Vav, Osir Aleph writes, Kvar Kasavnu Shagam Hutsa'a Me'akli Choshev Ishtamshus. That even taking food out of a kli, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that's called using the kli. So if you have a kli that's already chayiv in tevila, you're not allowed to eat from it. But maybe when you're eating somewhere else, at somebody else's house, and it's not your kli, so it's not your responsibility, it could be that you're allowed to eat out of it. But you can't pick up a fork or a spoon and put it into the food. If you know that he's offering you food in a dish that's not tovel, the best off, Rosh Hashanah Zalman says, if he's going to honor you by putting food on nice dishes that weren't Telveld, you should not go to that place in the first place. Meaning you should try to avoid causing him to do an Aveira by using dishes that are not Telveld, through you. There is a comment, though, that I'm pretty sure we did not mention from Rav Cook, the Raya, Rav Yitzchak Cohen Cook, in Das Cohen, Simon Reish Chav Zayin. If you ever read Rav Cook's Svarim, they're very, very hard, except for his tshuvas. His tshuvas are just like normal tshuvas. It's like it's almost like it's not the same person who wrote the tshuvas. It's really astonishing. So in Das Kohen, in Siman Reish Chaf Zayin, he has somewhat of an outside-the-box approach. He writes, V'zen yir l'anias daiti, de'itzel mumr l'chal shabbos v'farhes yelo aleinu. If you're dealing with someone who's l'chal shabbos, kibin d'kaimalan, She'enu ben bris, avgav di Yisrael, mikri linin kidesh linin tumas hanogos for Yisrael, davka. He says, even though he has a din of a Jew, but he's not a ben bris, mikamakum, kivin da omr b'yushalmi, b'tam tvi lezu, mepe she'yotza mirashas akum, l'kadushas Yisrael. He says, what is tvi laskelim? Tvi laskelim is that the food leaves tumas akum and goes into kadushas Yisrael. V'hai gavri hishlich bailov kadushas Yisrael. But this guy has abandoned Hishlich Me'alav, rather Kedushas Yisrael. He has abandoned Kedushas Yisrael. He has thrown away his Kedushas Yisrael. Near Lani Yazdaiti, the Ein Cheshash L'Shtamish BeKelav Hashulim Imenu Below Tvila. If it's not from Jew, you could use borrowed kelim from him without Tvila. Kemo Hashulim Inachri Atzmo, just like when you borrow kelim from a Nachri. Even though the Bavli doesn't mention this reason of going from Kedushas Akum to Kedushas Yisrael, we don't find a stira to it in the Bavli. And even though it's only Yerushalmi, when the Bavli doesn't go against the Yerushalmi, you assume like the Yerushalmi. Zen near Lila from Rieta, Vadayin the Dabar Tzarchechra, Vineni Kosu Mitov Tzirda. So two Kedushim, one smaller, one bigger. Right? Kedush number one is that we assume that the statement of the Yerushalmi, that the purpose of Tevilas Kelim is to bring something from Tumas Nachri to Kedushas Yisrael, is lahalacha, that it's not just a description of what the purpose is, that it's lahalacha, even though the Bavli doesn't quote it, it's lahalacha. You always have that question, right? What if the Bavli doesn't say anything? We know the riff at the end of Erevin says, we pass the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. What if the Bavli doesn't say anything? And the Yerushalmi does say something. Right? You have that question with Rishonim also, in halacha sometimes. You have an issue that's dealt with by almost nobody, and one Rishon says a Chiddush on that inyan. So do you assume that everyone agrees to that Rishon because he said that Chiddush and no one else argues? Or do you say, well, no one else said it, right? So, right, like, for example, I just spoke about this recently, the halacha that Yaharig Val Yavar, if you're Malden Pnei Chaver Barabim, is Yaharig Val Yavar. You have to die rather than Malden Pnei Chaver Barabim. So it's an agarat gemara, and Saitim, Bamitzia, whatever. So Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah both say, literally, Yahari Val Yavar, for different reasons, but literally, Yahari Val Yavar. No other Rishon really talks about it. They don't say yes, they don't say no, they just sort of let it go. You know, even though the Gemara in Sanhedrin only says there are three Yahari Val Yavars. So what do you assume? Do you work? So Binyan Tzion discusses this in the Shuvah. Do you assume that oh, if two Rishonim talk about it and they both say it is Yarek Val Yavar, it must be that we pass in that way? Or do you assume, no, it's such a crazy chiddush that it can't be that all the other Rishonim agree? So a similar idea when it comes to Bavli Yerushalmi. But the greater chiddush that he's suggesting is that since the Mumar L'chal Shabbos V'Esya, even though he will always be a Jew, since he doesn't keep the Torah, he's given up his Kedushas Yisrael, and therefore when you're using a kli from him, it's like using a kli that belongs to a Nachri. So that's, I don't think people, I don't think Poskim rely on that. That seems like a bit of a chiddush, but just to mention that.
Is there any risk then
what do you mean? When it comes to Pasach and Bishlag, it's a chumr over here, it's a kula.
Yeah,
so
that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Yubayz, very, very brief Sif, very straightforward, doesn't seem that there's anything to talk about, right? Tzarech lahakbil yudei hakli. You have to tovel the handles of the kli, based on the Mordechai. If the handles don't enter the water, the tevila is possible. That's even if the handles are made out of plastic. Nothing to say here, right? Except the Chassam Sofer has the following comment. Chassam Sofer asks, well, wait a second. And the Chassam Sofer consistently makes this comment that throughout Tzvilas Kelim, that he's very caught up on the fact that Tzvilas Kelim is derived from the parsha of Hagalas Kelim. So there's got to be some parallel between Tzvila and Hagalah. And there is a machlokas when a handle becomes treif. Whether a handle becomes treif when a kli becomes treif. If a kli becomes treif, does that affect the handle as well? Because unlike tevila, hagala could be done piece by piece. You don't have to do hagala on the entire kli at one time. Tevila, the whole kli's got to be dipped in the mikveh. By hagala, you could do piece by piece, right? So if the handle never became treif, then you wouldn't have to do hagala on the handle, right? You would only have to do hagala on the kli itself. And what's it telling you? Chamik tzasu cham kulo or not? And it happens to be that the Ramah's megel on that issue. So ask Chassam Sofer, you don't have to kasha the handle, then you shouldn't have to title the handle either, because Tevilas Kelim should mirror Hagolas Kelim. So in the Sefer Tevilas Kelim, he suggests that really the handle is pata from Tevila. But the only way, Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that, Tzarech lahakbil yudei hakli, doesn't mean it's chayiv in Tevila. It's just that one of the dinim of tevila is that the whole kli needs to go into the mikvah, otherwise it's not, none of the kli is not considered tovel b'chlal. So the only way to get a hechitimtza of toveling the part of the kli that needs tevila is by putting the whole kli in the mikvah, because otherwise it wasn't a tevila, because it is one kli, it's one big kli. But it's not that the handle is chayiv in tevila. The my nafkamina, it's just a different way of saying that you have to tovel the whole thing. I think the nafkamina might be whether you could have a chatzitza on the handle. Because if you hold that the whole thing needs to go in the mikveh, yeah, that the whole thing needs to go, the whole thing is in the mikveh. There is a bias mayim on the whole thing. The whole thing went into the mikveh. Elamai, there's a chatzitza on the handle. So the chatzitza will ruin the tevila of the handle. But that's, it won't be matzu then, but the handle never needed tevila in the first place. So that would be a very great chiddush to say that when the Shulchan Aruch tells me tzarech lahakbil yudei hakli, yeah, but you don't have to worry about chatzitza. That would be a great chiddush if that's in fact what the Sefer Tevilas Kelim means. It's quite a chiddush. I think Rav Tzipi Frank also says something very similar to that idea. All the poskim, at least contemporary poskim that I was able to find, I looked in the Sefer Ol Yaakov, they quote all the contemporary poskim, they all say you can't have a chatzitza on the handle either. Rav Krelitz and Rav Nevensal and all the standard achronim, they also says you have to total the handle. Why would you think that you can have a chatzitza? The basic dinam of chatzitza we know from the Gemara in the beginning of Masechus Erev and the Gemara in Masechus Nida, just to chazer over, the Gemara tells us that the Dvar Torah Rubo Makbid Olav Chotzeitz, that on a daraisa level, the only thing that's a chatzitza is if it covers the majority and you're makbid about it. But Chazal make a din rabbanan that one or the other is enough to be a chatzitza. If it's either rov or makbid, it's enough to create a problem of chatzitza. Chazal specifically say a miut she'eino makbid. If something covers a small part of the kli and you're not makbid about it, the Gemara asks, why don't they make a gzera on that? No, we don't make a gzera le gzera. For those of us who learned Nida last year, remember the Ramah quotes from the Shari Dura that a chumra that Ashkenazi women remove every foreign substance from their body, even a miut she'eino makbid. And the Achronim have trouble with it. It's against the Beferish Gemara. The Gemara asks that question. The Gemara says, we don't make such gzeiros. Okay, so you have to figure out why that is. Shachar had a suggestion that perhaps because the definition of rov may, according to some Rishonim, may be rov ever, rov kol ever ve'ever. So it could be that people will be confused about what's considered a miyut and what's considered a rov. Okay, whatever the answer might be to that question. But the same is true by Tevilas Kelim, that something is only a chatzitza on a derabbanan level, even if it's either something that covers the majority of the kli, or it's something that one is makbid about. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens straight like that Gemara. Tzarech Sif Yud Gimel. Tzarech Lavir Achaluda Kodem Tevila. Vimlo Evi Rimakbid Alav Chotzit Vim Shishif Nosem Bechol Benishra Adayin Ma Shal Chaluda Shal Yuchal Avra Al Yidei Kach Havim Mutar Shein Makbid Alav Ve'eno Chotzit. Yeah, so that's the halacha. So the other question, I think they quote from Reb Chaim. I think we discussed it last year, probably around the same time last year when we were doing Nida, that once we're going to say that Rubo She'eno Makbid is a chatzitza midrabanan, so doesn't that turn every Rubo She'eno Makbid into a Rubo Makbid? Meaning, once the Rabbanan tell you that that's going to be a chatzitza, so now I'm makbid about it. I wouldn't have been makbid about it before, but now they told me it's a chatzitza, so now I'm makbid about it. So every rubo she'eino makbid is going to become a rubo makbid, every chatzitza of the Rabbanan is automatically going to turn into a chatzitza midaraisa. I think that's the kasha that they quote. So I think they quote in the name of Chaim that rubo ve'eino makbid means you're only makbid on the part that gets you to rope. Meaning, because it's only chatzitza midrabanan, it's rubo ve'eino makbid, so only part that from 49% to 51%, that 2% is what you're makbid about. The rest you still don't care about. So vayter becomes a chatzitza midrabanan. Yeah, pashtus is that makbid ve'eino makbid means not based on halacha. Makbid ve'eino makbid means had it not been for the halacha, would you be makbid or would you not be makbid? Similar to what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, and it's true, it's about psuk resha delo nichle. Right? So you can say, oh, when I open the fridge, lights go on, but it's lo nichle. I don't want, or when I walk down the hotel, when I'm put up at a hotel, you know, from my shul that I'm rabbinic interviewing, so the lights go on. I don't want the lights go on. I don't want to be mechal yantif. I'm not interested in lights. Yeah, but you don't want to walk in the dark, meaning had it not been, they do it for your benefit. Had it not been for the fact that it was yantif, you'd be very happy with it. So you can't call that a psik resha delo nichle. That's the pashtus. Yeah, so even though it's a halachic issue. Yeah. Rambo's machmir even b'di'evet on the fingernails?
Yeah, there was an machlokas whether that's b'di'evet. I mean, it's clear he says he needs to go back to the mikvah again. What if she's already been with her husband, so then you have a machlokas shach, how b'di'evet.
It's a question of how to define b'di'evet, I guess. Right. Okay. Yeah, it's a good point. Now, what if you tovel a kli and then you see that there's a sticker on it that bothers you? So, do you have to say a new bracha? So, clearly, if you're still at the mikvah, you're still toveling, you don't have to say a new bracha because you're still covered with the first bracha. But if lechar, if you had a hazakadash, or you went home already, and then you found it, then if it was a real chatzitza, meaning if it was something that you are makbid about, even if you were makbid, even if it's only chatzitza midrabanan, it's a miyuchin a makbid, it's lo also a tvila. The tefillah doesn't count when it's chatzitza midrabanan, right? Everyone agrees that if a woman goes to the mikveh and then finds something that mamash is a chatzitza midrabanan, she's got to go back to the mikveh, even if she's been with her husband already. She has to go back to the mikveh. Then she has to, with a new bracha. The Shulchan Aruch, back in Sif Beis, told us, based on the Mishnah and the Seches Mikvahs, that you shouldn't hold on to the kli too tightly when you dip it in the mikveh, because your tight grip isn't going to allow the water to reach every section of the kli. However, If you wet your hands a little bit, then it's mutter, because when the water of the mikvah touches the water on your hands becomes like part of the mikvah water, and now the mikvah water is therefore touching every section of the kli. That's based on a halacha about toveling beds for taharos purposes, when they were tovel mitos, that even though the legs of the bed sink in the mud at the bottom of the river, because it's a very heavy kli, the mayim akdim. Can I just ask you, for Shefi's next door, can you just bring this into him? Thanks. The mayim akdim, the water will first hit the bottom of the legs of the bed before they sink in the mud. So the Rama says that you need to wet your hands with mikvah water, which is a little bit odd. The Taz and many others argue, because the water in your hands, it gets hashaka with the mikvah. It connects to the mikvah anyway. If you take tap water and you connect it to the mikvah, so that's how our mikvahs are made, right? What you're actually dipping in is not the actual mikvah water. So you have hashaka anyway. So in Mati Yohanasan, he explains the Rama, and Ramesha writes that he prefers the Mati Yohanasan's explanation more than the Shach and Taz's explanation. He says, Avala emes yoredarko, ta'pirish b'divra harama lokeinu. That if you took water out of the mikvah, meaning the Shach and Taz raises a question, even if you do wet your hands with the mikvah water, the second you pick your hand up out of the mikvah, it's not mikvah water anymore, because you've taken it out of the mikvah. Then what's it going to help? You take your hands out of the mikvah to hold the kli, and then you put it back in. It's the same as wetting your hands with tap water. So he says, He says, what you should do is stick your hand in the mikvah, then take your other hand and hand the kli from one end, from the hand that's out of the mikvah to the hand that's inside of the mikvah. And in that way, whatever moisture is on your hand is still actually the main mikvah. Mashenkinim hotzi mitchila, as opposed to if you took your hand out, v'talash hamayim mimakum chiburo, and the water is now no longer connected to the mikvah, da'az lekashem mikvah alav. And in such a case, if you don't loosen your hands a little bit, it's not even going to be connected to the mikvah. In the case of the bed, where the water hits the bottom of the legs first, hainu kivin she'efshar shalo yamayim kodem l'makom moshav haraglayim. Im kein kivin she'em betoch ha'mikvah l'mis batal she'em mikvah mimenu. Meaning what he suggests is that when you have a tight grip and the water underneath your hands is not mikvah water, then it's going to be a problem. It's not going to have hashaka. It's not really going to be connected, because a tight grip prevents hashaka. But when it's actual mikvah water, then you don't need hashaka. It's considered to be connected enough. Meaning, the tight grip, the water on the surface of your hands may be somehow connected to the mikvah water, but not enough to create a sense of hashaka. It's not it's such a tiny connection that it's not enough to create a sense of hashaka. So that's why the Rama holds you need to have mikvah water. So okay, might as well be machmir that way. Now when you're toveling something, if you're going to hold it tight, then it's always hard to know what's tight, what's loose, what's considered, yeah, thank you. What's tight, what's loose, and you know, if that's considered to be, so because it's hard to know what's tight, what's loose, so just keep your hand in the mikveh and hand it to your hand that's already in the mikveh, you might as well. I always do that, I mean, just hand from, I'll take the kli with one hand, stick it in the mikveh, just hand it to the other hand, take it out, you know, that. It's efficient, and you end up with a pile of kelim here, and then you just move it over to the other side. When toveling a bunch of kelim together in a bag filled with holes, you know, like a set of forks and knives, so you need to shake it a little bit. You have to make sure the water gets to every part of every fork and knife. So Mishabrura in Tafnun Beis, of Kutin Beis, says that you're allowed to tovel lots of kelim together, but he doesn't say anything about shaking it. He talks about this topic, though, with regard to Netilas Yadayim when you're wearing a ring. In Simukuf Samachal Sifkat Nites, the Mechaber says to remove even a loose ring. So the Mishabura writes that only an Isha who removes her rings when she needs dough has to remove it. But a man who doesn't need dough and always keeps his ring on doesn't have to remove even a tight ring, because he would never take it off. Unless it has a stone that he would take it off, because he doesn't want to get a stone wet. That's an assumption. Obviously, it's totally mitzvah. If people don't mind getting their stone wet, then that's fine. And he never removes it, then that's perfectly fine. It's not going to be a chatzitza. We had a graduate from DRS once. When he got engaged, his caller called him up and said, "Are you sitting down? I have some bad news." And he said, "Oh no, what's the matter?" And she said, "Sitting down." He's like, "Well, just talk to me." And she said, "I was washing in the pizza shop for pizza, and I took off my engagement ring. I put it by the sink. I forgot about it. I went back, and it's gone." And to his great credit, he said, "Oh, Baruch Hashem, it's just money. I thought like something was really wrong." His brother told me his parents did not have the same reaction. And to this day, his father jokes that they bought more engagement rings per child, you know, per capita than. but anyway, so at that time, Rabbi Aryeh Cohen was from DRS, told me the Maisa, that this happened with one of our Talmidim, and he said that he told the guy that she probably shouldn't take off her rings anyway when she washes. Why does she have to take off her ring when she washes? So I looked into the issue a little bit then, and I wrote about this in my second sefer in Chelik Beis Makon Olam Simul Ches. There's a Tshuva Chassam Sofer in Yardei Sim Kuf Tzadi Beis is Medayik, that if you remove your ring for reasons other than Hakpada, then it would not be a Chatzitza, because a man removes his ring for some things, right? He removes his ring, says the Chassam Sofer, to put on tefillin, to shake lulav, he takes off his ring. So it's not because he's makbid, he's just removing his ring because he wants to be able to do those mitzvahs. L'chora, that's quite a chiddush, that you can't take lulav or put on tefillin when you're wearing a ring. Rav Menashe Klein is a tshuva in Chelek Beis in Yeralev of Mishnah Halachos, where he writes, "Vida, de midivrei Chassam Sofer anal lamadati, da asu laniach tefillin al tabas." The Chassam Sofer is telling us, you're not allowed to put tefillin over a ring. Sounds like he holds it is la halacha, not just the chumrah, which is a big chiddush. That anything below the elbow is la halacha is a big chiddush that you can't have a chatzitza. Vayin Ramasim in Tavresh Nanal of Siv Zayin Davi Rav Chumrah. Umash Atzim the Divrei Ramak of Nosul Mashukasa Vinagul Lahach Mil Hasir Tzum Vitabos Miyadam Al Medina in Lachash Ol Vein Kol Yadam Chusabem. But the Rama writes that the minig is to take off your ring or whatever when you put on tefillin, but minadin it's not going to be, or when you take a lulav, but minadin it's not going to be a problem because your whole hand is not covered with it. And the Shabur brings a lot of achron that even though midina we should be makar on it because of chatzitza, even though your whole hand is not covered with it, and he says al kedim natal ba'ud shlo isir tefillin min yada va'atabaus. That if a person did netil zula while he was still wearing tefillin around his fingers, or while he still had a ring around his fingers, he should take lulav again. That's based on a comment of the Aguda in Parak Makom Shnagu in Pesachim that yesh makpidin akol davar achotet bein lulav bein yad lekach mesirin tzitzios v'tefillin min yad. So this is a big discussion. What exactly is a chatzitza and what is not a chatzitza when it comes to anything? So over here, the idea that the basic idea is that you really need to get the entire thing, the entire kli wet, and we assume that most of the things that are going to be there, that are gonna be most of the stickers or whatever else, are something that a person normally would be makbid on. There are certain stickers that maybe a person is not makbid on. And there are certain stickers that, like, a person might say, you know, it has a brand name on it or something like that, that, you know, that they like to show off and is not, doesn't get in the way. So, you know, not every case. So there are certain cases where the sticker is a clear sticker on the bottom of a kli and no one would ever see it. So the Balabasta maybe gets upset that it wasn't taken off before the tefillah, but that's only because she's concerned about tefillah's kelim, not because she thinks that, not because she minds it so much. But most of the time, if there's something on the kli, there's a concern that it would be makbid. Because even if you're only makbid when you have fancy company, when you have important people over, that's also called makbid, because that's like we had in Hilchos Tevila by Hilchos Chatzitza by Nida, that if you're ever makbid on it, it's called Chatzitza. Chatzitza is only if you're never, it's only not makbid if you're never makbid on it. Yeah. Yeah, Mishavura also, by the way, over there also says we're not pekiyin in what's called roughly. So that's why we remove even loose rings. But b'diavad, if it's roughly, it's fine. If you have a ring that's loose, b'diavad, it's fine. A woman once came over to me in shul, or called me during the week. She told me that she had to go to the mikvah, and she could not budge her ring, like not even slightly. So if it moves a little bit and she just can't get it over the knuckle, this time of year, when as the weather gets hot, people's hands tend to swell. So a ring that used to fit, it used to be able to come on and off, doesn't always easily go on and off. So a lot of times she can't get it over the knuckle, but she can move it up and down the below the knuckle. So if she could do that, so then water will hit every part and will be sumich, but that's called roughly enough. But she couldn't budge it, so that's not roughly, and that you can't be tovel like that. So I tried to give her eitzah. I don't know. I Googled it, couldn't find anything that worked for her. I saw it on Shabbos. I know it was off. I don't know if a jeweler cut it off or whatever. But when toveling a bowl or a glass bottle or a champagne glass, you also have to be careful to know a little bit of the physics. You know, like how to make sure that water fills the entire cavity. If you just like stick it in upside down, so there will be a water. There will be an air bubble. That will, so the water will not touch every section of the bowl. So you should tovel it face up, so the contents of the glass fill up with the mikvah water, and then once they're submerged, you take them out. Okay. Now, last basic topic, second to last topic. The Ramban and Rashba teach that tevilas kelim does not need kavana. So if a kli falls into the mikvah, it's kosher. It's kosher tevila, just like you have by tevilas isha, right? That we learned last year also. If a woman is pushed into the mikvah, that's also kosher tevila, right? That was the famous comment of Rav Meisha, when Rav Meisha was asked about a bas nida. A guy was dating a balas tshuva, and she seemed to have all these wonderful midos. But he knows the Gemara says that someone who's conceived when the mother is a nida has certain chisronos in the midos. So he wanted to know whether he should be concerned. So Meisha said, "Nah, the stama, the mother went to the beach, and she wasn't a nida." She's a big kasha because hefsek tara we pass him as daraisa, so it's an invalid tevila. Even right, daraisa, it's invalid. I don't know. She went to the beach, doesn't necessarily work as a tevila. But anyway, that's what Meisha said. The stipler are different. The stipler in Kayin Vedigrasa says, no, even you see that she was able to overcome, even though she had all this working against her, she was able to overcome it and still become such a balas nidos. So that Adrabba, it's more reason to want to marry her. A Hasidim, they would never marry. You know, they're like, a lot of the Hasidim are very makbid about this. And Gemara says, you're not supposed to do it. So it's like it's a very different attitude when it comes to this. Anyway, so the Shulchan Aruch here in Sif Tezvav, im hitbil kelim al yedei ovid kochavim, also lehem tevila. Right, Shulchan Aruch tells us that if a guy does the tevilas kelim, you don't need kavana, so it's kosher, because it's no worse than kelim that fall into the mikvah. And then the Rama adds, avaleinu neman al tevila. You just have no way of knowing that he actually did it, because you can't trust him to say that he did it, even though he's kosher to make it happen. And the same applies with the kata, right? In Sif Yodalid, I don't know why I did Sif Tesva first. Eim amidim katan al tevilas kelim, and then the Rama says, avam tavu v'negad al avi tevila. Now the katan can do tevila, it's just eim amidim. I don't know why the Rama and the Chaber switched jobs in Yadalev and Tesva. Right? They're saying two chidushim. Chidush number one is that people who are incapable of having kavana, it's a good tevila. Chidush number two is that you can't trust them about the tevila. I don't know why the Mechaber in Yadalev is the one that tells us that you can't trust them, and the Tezvav tells me, but with regard to the Nachri, that he's capable of making tevila, and why the Ramah is flipped. Oh, that's just a funny thing. The Bach holds that the Chachila really tevila needs kavan. But the Taz here in Sivkot Yud Zayin says that the Bach just made a mistake. You don't need kavan, even the Chachila by tevilas kelim. Shach agrees with the Taz. The Taz in Sivkot Yud Zayin then adds that a person should not let a non-Jew or a Katan do the tevila, even if you are standing there, because you do lose something. You lose out on the bracha, because you can only make a bracha if you're doing the Maisa Mitzvah. So, but if you make a bracha and you put one dish in the mikvah, then the non-Jew can even lechachila tovel the rest of the kelim that you brought. I think that's what the restaurants and the caterers do. They don't want to sit there all day toveling kelim, so they have the guy in there. They're watching over them, and they'll make the bracha tovel one of the mashkiach will make the bracha tovel one of the kelim, and then they'll watch as the guy tovels the rest of the kelim. There's a Magen Avraham, I think, in Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah, that if a woman forgot to light Shabbos candles and she was ready to kabbal Shabbos, so she can have a guy light and say the bracha, and she can say the bracha. Well, the guy will light the Shabbos candles because she's the woman's ready to kabbal Shabbos. Yeah, sometimes like this, right? That happens. The question is why she would be allowed to say a bracha if a guy is lighting the candles. Meaning, if a bracha is on the Maisa Mitzvah, so why would the woman be allowed to say a bracha? So Shulchan Aruch Rav over there suggests that it's different than Tevila, because by Tevila the Gemara Mitzvah is the Maisa Tevila. So that's it. That's the whole Mitzvah. Whereas by Adachas Neiros, it's not the Gemara Mitzvah. The ongoing presence of the light is what provides Onik Shabbos, and the purpose of it is for Onik Shabbos. Meaning, in Har Tzvi, he formulates it, or Sipes Frank formulates it, that the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos is that it shouldn't be dark. So it's true, Kavod Shabbos may be in that one moment, if you assume Kavod Shabbos means that which you do before Shabbos in preparation for Shabbos. So Kavod Shabbos may be in that one moment, but we light Neir Shabbos for Onik Shabbos as well. And Onik Shabbos is an ongoing thing. So the mitzvah is to see to it that there not be dark on Shabbos. That's the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. So she's seeing to it by having a guy light, and therefore it's not going to be dark on Shabbos, and therefore she can say the mitzvah. It's still a little difficult, because if you hold that a birchsa mitzvah has to be only on a maisa mitzvah, like Rav Shaftar writes in Eretz Tzvi in the Kuntros birchsa mitzvos, right, that a birchsa mitzvah is not just on a kiyum mitzvah, birchsa mitzvah is always on a maisa mitzvah. So even though it may be a kiyum mitzvah on a Shabbos, but if you didn't do the maisa mitzvah, it's very hard. It's very hard to understand why you'd be allowed to say a bracha, but so says Magen Avraham. So it reminded me a little bit of you know, this discussion over here, where we seem to assume the Taz seems to assume it's not going to work, that you need to do a Maisa, otherwise you can't say a bracha, just to see to it that your Kelim Martovel is not going to be good enough as far as the bracha. The Gra in Sif Katan Mamid Vav, when it comes to the Mamas of a Katan, tells us that you know, basic rules of when you believe a katan and when you don't. We get into trouble when we start applying these rules outside of Tevilas Kelim. Meaning in Tevilas Kelim, okay, so I won't send the kid to do Tevilas Kelim. But sometimes you might get into trouble when we start applying all these rules. If you look in the Gra, he says that the Ne'amanus, he gives rules for Ne'amanus. He says that Tevilas Kelim is Daraisa, so katan is not believed on anything that's Eino Biyado, even if it's a Darabana. And anything that's daraisa, even if it's biyado, meaning in order for a katan to be believed, it needs to be biyado to do, and it needs to be a drabana. And if it's daraisa, katan doesn't just mean katan. It means not being a katan doesn't just mean being bar mitzvah. It means having shtei saros as well. So he's telling us a klal that a katan is believed only for an isur drabana biyado. You ask a child to go buy you, go to the makolet. You know, in America, no one asks children to do anything. Children are kings. But in Israel, sometimes the child has to actually go somewhere and do something. So they ask a child, you know, take your little sister and brother and go to the makolet and buy me whatever, right? So that means they tell the 4-year-old, take the 2-year-old and the infant and go, you know, cross the big street and go to the makolet and, you know. In Israel, somehow children, you know, they could do things that you know, American teenagers can't do. So the kid goes to pick up, you know, to pick up the food, and they bring back whatever the food is. Can you trust it? Maybe they went to the bodega, not to the makolet. Right? How do you know where they went? If it doesn't, say if it's packaged goods, it's one thing. You know, if you're in a Frum neighborhood, you're in the Five Towns, you're in Flatbush or whatever, let's say you're in Washington Heights. There are many more, there are kosher stores, there are many more non-kosher stores. You say, go get me a pizza. And they bring you with a brown bag, a piece of pizza. So can you trust it? I don't know. if you're the chashash is daraisa and it's a child, probably you can.
There's no cheska sister.
So the Taz, the Darkei Tshuva is makel based on that. No, Darkei Tshuva is makel based on Mirta. So we'll get to that in a second with the cheska sister. If you're in a place where the majority of stores are kosher, so called the parish Miruba parish, so even if you found them on the street, you could probably be makel. I mean, we wouldn't, but you could, so you could be makel with the kid, because it's called the parish Miruba parish. The Taz, in the beginning of Hilchos Shechita, raises the question about how people can trust a katan to go ask a rav a question in Hilchos Shechitas, which also used to be standard. I met a woman when I was in Israel, a woman who runs an organization, I think it's called Kesher Yehudi, where she has, she sets up Haredi people to learn with Chilonim in person. And they have like thousands and tens of thousands of Chavrusas going on. It's similar to Partners in Torah, but it's like much, much bigger. And they get together in person, not on the phone, like in mixed neighborhoods, you know, or they'll travel from one neighborhood to the other. We actually went to an event, it was mamash unbelievable. So she was a Slonimer Chassid growing up, and she said she grew up down the hall from Rav Eliashiv. And as a little girl, whenever there was an issue with the chicken, she remembers she had to run to the Rav and ask him the Shaila with the chicken. That was standard. You send the kid with the chicken, and he goes and he asks the Rav the Shaila with the chicken. So the Taz says, everyone always did that. How do you do that? Hilchos Treifus. How do you trust the child? So Darkei Tshuva is making about trusting people to Shaila because there may be a Mirtas, since he knows he might check up on him. Meaning the next time the mother is going to be walking down the hallway and sees Rav Eliashiv, she'll say, oh, thank you for helping out my daughter. Helping out your daughter? I didn't help out, you know? So she knows that they might be, or the Rav might say, oh, your daughter was so cute, she came over with this chicken or whatever. So in Pesukei Tshuva Sivkatni Adali, he talks about trusting for glass kid, and he suggests that since it's Becheskas Isser, you can't trust him. Although most poskim trust poskim that you can trust him in glass kid, the Pesukei Tshuva goes so far as to say that for a medical, even a bar mitzvah boy can't be trusted. You need the shtei saros. Now, so that's a question whether the cheskas, meaning I guess when you ask someone to pick you up something from the store, so you're saying there's no cheskas isser to begin with.
I don't know, unless an arrangement, like if you'd say most stores are trade, is that cheskas isser?
That's a good question, I'm not sure. There is a machlokes of a ger needs to tovel his kin after he converts. So in Tzitz Eliezer Chelchas, Simon Yutas, he says no, because he enters Kedusha Shal by going to the mikvah. It's as if his kelim went through the process as well. That's the famous vart that they quote that the Shem Yishmuel quotes from his father, from Yavnezer. Even though I don't think it's in Shuvah's Yavnezer, but that's what the Shem Yishmuel quotes from his father, that it enters Kedusha Shal together with the ger. However, Rav Asner and Shevet Alevi and a lot of other poskim do say it requires tefillah, because the kelim came from the possession of a non-Jew and entered Kedusha Shal. I know when we do gerus, I think I mentioned Rav Shachter's psak for our Beis Din is that they should tovel the kelim but without a bracha in deference to the Avni Nezer, so no bracha. There is a fascinating tshuva in the Avni Yashba in Chelik Zayin Simit Sadi Dalit. It talks about a case where a woman, this happens a lot also, a woman thought she was Jewish. So she was a Haredi woman, from woman, and then she found out that she wasn't Jewish. She wanted to know, does she have to tell? So she goes through a gear right now, right? But she already told all of her kin. She was keeping, you know, she was a Haredi woman. She just wasn't Jewish. So she already told all of her kin when she got there. So does she need to go back and tell her kin again? So he quotes the Beis Yosef, the name Yerushalmi, that Tevilas Kadesh Yetzim Tomasu Shanachri, the Kadushasa Shay Yisrael. That Tevilas Kelim is like a Tevilas Hager. So just like the person needs to enter into the covenant with Tevilas, so too the Kelim. ובחיים, איש הזו שהטבילה עשה כלים באמס, הצליחה בתפילה, אשר לא צריך כוונה בתפילה. אלא אפילו נפלה כלים למקווה, הרי הם טבולים. She married tovel through kelim. And it doesn't matter that she's a guy, because we just learned that a guy can tovel kelim. It's not a problem. The kelim just fall in, it's good enough. Vim kein, גם אם גוי הטבילה עשה, הרי הם טבולים. כמו שכסו שולחן אחר די עקוב חף סיב תזווה, ושח סיב קודם חף חס. What's the problem? Well, the shakan, after she hit Bilas HaKelim, her initial HaKelim Bereshusa. But after she told the Kelim, they still belong to her. I mean, she told the Kelim 10 years ago. And guess what? She was still a guy for another 10 years. So after she told the Kelim, they still belong to her. So it's still in the Reshus of a guy. So it doesn't matter that a Tevila of a guy could be valid. What does it mean a Tevila of a guy could be valid? Once there's a Chi of Tevila, then if a guy does it, it's valid. But over here, there was no Chi of Tevila yet, because it was still in the Rishus of a guy. Ulamaisa. Acha shishazu tiskayat tztarich lahatbil keleha mechadosh im bracha. So he says, Pashto says she needs to tovel all the kelim with a bracha when she's a guy. Even though she toveled them when she was a guy. Wow. I mean, it's hard to argue, right? I mean, it makes a lot of sense. In Sifta Zayin, last thing, Shulchan Aruch Pasuk is based on a Rush that you should not tovel a kli on Shabbos because it looks like near a ketikun mana, looks like you're fixing the kli. So if you forgot to tovel a kli before Shabbos or Yontif, give it as a gift to a non-Jew and then borrow it from him. And this is where we got one of those heterim with the electric appliances was to borrow from Sifta Zayin, but to do on Shabbos. Then after Shabbos, you buy it back from the non-Jew and you tovel it with a bracha. Now, if you buy the kli back from a non-Jew, it's going to need tefillah with the bracha. That's based on the Shulchan Aruch and Sifir Aleph. That if the Jew sells a kli to a non-Jew and then buys it back, it's obligated in tefillah. And Pesachit Shuvin, Sifkat Yud Gimel says that if you sell your kelim to a non-Jew on Pesach, when you buy them back, you need to tovel them again. This is what the Chazon Ish formulated in their Nusach Shtar Mechira, that we don't do that. That we don't sell. I think the Nusach, I don't know what the current Nusach is, but initially the suggested Nusach was that we sell the Blios in the Kelim, if those can be sold, and those Kelim that don't require Tevila. And that's how we formulated it. Because Kelim that do require Tevila, we don't want to sell because I'm going to have to tovel all the Kelim again. Rav Vadya in Yechav Das Chel Gimel Sim Chav Dal, it says that if you did sell all of your kelim, yes, you have to tov them when you buy them back, but without a bracha. The Shach over here in Sifkan Chav Tes quotes a Raman or a Chaim in Shin Chav Gimel, who has another solution, what to do on Shabbos. He says the Raman writes that if a kli needs tevila can be filled with water, you can go to the mikveh, fill the kli with water. And in a way that it doesn't look like you're toveling it, and therefore it's not near a ketikun mana, because it just looks like you're filling it with water. But then you certainly can't say a bracha, because that will definitely make it near a ketikun mana. So the Mishmar over there says that you should only use that solution if you have no other kelim to use, because you're going to be losing the bracha. Why would you give up on the bracha? Meaning, it's one thing if you're going to do the solution that we suggest over here, you're going to sell it to a guy, you're going to buy it back. You won't lose out on the mitzvah. You'll still be able to do tefillah skelim after Shabbos. You'll buy it back and you'll do the mitzvah tefillah skelim with a bracha, so you won't lose out on anything. But in the case of filling it with water, so then it is a valid tefillah. You're just not going to be able to say the bracha because it's going to be near a ketikun mana if you recite the bracha. So that's why it's the less preferred of the two solutions, and it's not quoted over here at all by the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, we'll stop there. Bez Hashem on Sunday. Right, on Sunday we'll start Hakshar Kelim. So Hakshar Kelim is interesting. It's only seven Se'ifim here because this isn't really where it is. But in a certain sense, it's easy. Meaning, you got to learn in Hilchos Pesach. But in a certain sense, it's easier to learn from Yaradeya because it sort of like cuts to the chase a little bit more in the Shulchan Aruch and Yaradeya. But you know, you need to have a companion sefer with you, the Mishabura. You need to have a Mishabura in Hilchos Pesach, okay, in order to really do a decent job with Hakshar Kelim. So, Bez Hashem, next week we'll discuss Hakshar Kelim. Okay.